Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with the multi-talented, multi-faceted Day Bogan. He is so many frickin' hyphens, I'm not even going to attempt to describe what he does, but we met last year at a conference where we were both speaking to a bunch of eager people, and that was actually one of my first conferences, and I feel that they're in his bloodline, because it seems like he does at least 73 a day. So I'm really excited to have him on. And we can all learn a little bit of knowledge from Day. On Facebook, he is a golden warrior, and he chimes in and he helps people in need. And he'll yell at me for saying this, but he's a published e-booker. So I'm really excited for that. Again, the past few weeks have not had Emily Burke here, which is really upsetting. So I'm doing this all by my lonesome. But the next bunch of weeks, we have some great people on the show. We've got Jenna Pell, who is at Catalyst Publicity in Florida, and like Day, she actually teaches some courses at universities. So if you don't learn anything from this show, you could take one of their courses. And then just basically, November is kind of a wash, which is kind of good because we have a whole bunch of episodes like backlogged. But in December, I'm going to be in Nashville, and right when I get back, the next episode is going to be a really cool one. It's going to be Eva Alexia Rio, who has her own booking agency called Feta. So this has been a really good year for Waldman's Words. Again, last year we had a bunch of people that were more in front of the quote-unquote camera, and now we have the behind-the-scenes people like Day, who help the people in front of the camera become, I guess, a skosh more presentable. That's the best way I could think of to do it. So every single Tuesday night, at 5 o'clock our time on the Pacific Coast, which for some reason is experiencing a ginormous heat wave, which is causing me to change my clothes quite often. 5 o'clock our time, 8 o'clock Eastern time, which is the time zone that Day is from in Ohio. And crazy story before we start this little interview. Oh, I just got tagged on Facebook and Instagram. No, the crazy thing about this is that Day and I actually had a drink at an airport in Dallas, through the powers of social media, at this bar that really wanted us to leave right away. So that was really flattering. So, oh, by the way, this episode will actually be rerun on Sunday morning at 5 a.m. when Day wakes up. So he's going to listen to himself at 5 a.m. Pacific time and 8 a.m. Eastern time. You can go on iTunes and download it. You can go to the Adobe site. You can just go nuts. So stick around. Enjoy these commercials. Enjoy these songs. And Tune Registry is the shizzle. Stay tuned. Hello, welcome to Waldman's Words with Mr. Day Bogan. Thanks for coming to the Valley, buddy.
Thank you for having me.
So I said in the intro, which not every guest is privy to, but you were because you were early, which is fucking rare in Los Angeles, but you're a major hyphen. You do a lot of things, but let's start at the beginning. Were you reared in Ohio?
I was. Yeah, I've been born and raised in Cleveland and moved to L.A. 14 years ago. So,
14 years ago. So you lived, I mean, cause it's crazy because you just turned 21. So you moved here when you were 7 years old. And that's probably why you were homeless, because you were seven. You didn't really have a way to make some income.
Exactly. I was on the street just trying to figure out my way. No. I'm not 21. I moved here when I was 18, aspiring artist. You know, technically homeless, unemployed, no social network at the time, and you know, really built my career as a music industry and entertainment professional from the ground up. So here I am 14 years later.
On Waldman's Words.
On Waldman's Words.
But how did you get to that point? Let's talk about your roots in Ohio. So did you come from a musical family?
I did. I came from a musical family. My dad's side of the family and my mom's side of the family, both very musical. My dad himself, you know, was an entrepreneur in the music industry in Cleveland, and you know, had a small music company, managing talent, putting together bands, and he's also a multi-instrumentalist. My grandfather, his father, is a multi-instrumentalist, and you know, my brothers, you know, we were all musicians, you know, as kids, you know, trying to do the whole next round of Jackson 5. But there was three.
Okay.
But
so Jackson 3.
Yeah, Bogan 3 or D3.
But, okay.
But I was really the only one that stuck with singing. My other brothers were more interested ultimately in rapping, and eventually, you know, not really pursuing the music industry. I decided to come to Los Angeles right after high school to pursue the entertainment industry, like hundreds of thousands of people do.
Yeah, I heard a rumor that a lot of people move here for
like
that.
Often you get here like, oh, I thought I was the only one. Who are you people?
Yep. Why is everyone doing what I'm doing? And who are all these actors?
Yeah, who are these actors? I was one of them too.
You're keeping with this hyphen motif.
Yeah, well, I mean, I was a very hyphenated talent when I was a teen. Actor slash musician, that was my goal.
Were you in community theater growing up?
I was in school, you know, music and theater. So in high school, I was in choir, and I was also in drama club. So I did all the plays and musicals and all the a cappella choir stuff, so that was fun.
So take me to day one of coming out here. What was that like, and how did that... I mean, you said 14... So you moved here in 03... I moved here in 03 as well.
I moved here December 4th, 2003, in afternoon at Burbank Airport.
Okay, small airport.
Yeah, it's very small. I had a box with my computer, and by box, I mean a big box and a, you know, CTR monitor and a, you know, tower and a big monitor. Mm-hmm.
A desktop.
And, yeah, literal. Mm-hmm. And then a duffel bag full of clothes. I had a one-way ticket. I had $400 in cash and a $200 total Visa starter debit card.
Okay. So you were making the dough, $600.
Yeah, I was like living. I just took my last little check from Six Flags in Ohio. But I got a one-way ticket off of Craigslist for Southwest Airlines. And was like, I'm going to LA, even though I don't have a place to live or a job. I had arranged a couch to rent from some woman maybe with mini cats who was renting a couch, which I've never heard of before. But I was like, okay, renting a couch.
You mean couch space, not just a couch, like couch indoors.
Literally, you know, here's pay me $50 and you can stay on my couch. Pay me $50, you know.
For how long?
I don't remember if that's the rate, actually. It was a weekly rate to live on her couch. And I was like, okay, well, if all else fails, I have this as a backup.
Okay. I've never, ever heard of that.
You know, and now there's Couchsurfer.com, right? So she was so ahead of the trend.
She should have got in on that.
She should have got in. Yeah, now it's Airbnb,
if someone
right?
Airbnb, but if someone would have told you about Uber years ago.
Yeah, she was clearly innovative. But so on Craigslist, she had a couch available for rent. So I just imagine a sketchy couch in the house full of cats with this woman.
A spinster.
But I was like, okay, you know, put that on hold. I landed an interview for a job as a personal assistant for a Emmy Award-winning director, producer, who's done some really great work with some top artists like Michael Jackson. And I found the job offer on Craigslist.
Craigslist is your guy, dude.
Craigslist was my go-to back in the day.
That's how I got into the band I was in, and we signed with a major label. It works, and it also works for some creepy shit.
I was also in a group off of Craigslist. Boy band in Ohio. The last thing I left was a little boy band.
The Jackson 3.
No, one beyond that. But I had landed a job interview to be assistant to this Emmy Award-winning, you know, music film industry guy. And the job included living at his house with the other staff. So I was like, okay, this is great. I can get a job and a place to stay all in one shot.
And you don't need that couch anymore.
And I wouldn't need that couch. So I was like, okay, I need to get this job on the first day I get there. And I had the guy pick me up from the airport, from Burbank Airport, and went back to his offices and met some of his like office staff and interviewed. And long interview process. And normally you do one interview and then, you know, they have to think about it and get back to you. Or they just don't like you. And I didn't think I was going to get the job. It was a long shot, right? You're being a personal assistant to someone. I would have to drive around the city. I didn't have a car. Didn't know Los Angeles. I'm not from here.
You just got there.
I literally just got there. He picked me up. He knew I just got there. Long story short, he had like 100 applicants, people who had, you know, great backgrounds as personal assistants. They'd worked with other celebrities before and music industry and film industry experts.
And just, I want to slow you down. You were 18. You just graduated high school.
I just graduated high school.
Wow. So you were super green.
Yes, super green. So long story short, I got the job over all these more
that day
reputable and more established personal assistants. And he's like, well, when do you want to start? I was like, I started when you picked me up from the airport.
You mean you even got it like pretty much midair before you were in the plane?
No, I interviewed when I got here.
Okay.
Right. So he picked me up from the airport with all my stuff.
For the interview. Okay.
And he's like, okay, this is, you know, not non-traditional, but, you know, whatever. And it was actually picking up Burbank Airport, and we went to Sun Valley and interviewed. And I had this booklet that I've developed over the years in high school with all of the awards and recognitions that I've gotten as a student, you know, kind of involved with organizations. And I presented that binder. Well, here's all my accomplishments as a person at this point.
As
an 18-year-old. And between that and then my personality, he's like, okay, you seem like you'd be a good assistant for me. Despite the fact that I didn't know anyone at CAA or William Morris or all these places I didn't eventually go to on his behalf or drive around town and make run errands for him. But got the job, and as a result, I had a place to stay. So I didn't have to live on the couch with all the cats.
Yeah, I wouldn't want you to have to do that. I'd probably be coughing from that. But I just want to bring something up that we actually bring up on several shows where – when you're starting out, you're never too small for any job.
Right.
So I actively encourage people to take assistant jobs doing some of the stuff that I'm sure that isn't in your job description.
This was 2003. This was $200 a week stipend. And I was like, this would be great. Just get me this job.
But you didn't have rent.
I didn't have rent. I didn't have to worry about food because it was all taken care of. I didn't have bills outside of, you know, maybe getting a car.
Cell phone, stuff like that.
And they come up as a flip phone for nothing.
Texting on those sucked, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, I got situated, but then I left 2 months later and started my own life outside of being someone's assistant.
What was the catalyst for that? Were you just over it?
This was mostly just a transitional thing for me, right? So I wasn't planning to be someone's lifelong assistant. I just needed a place to stay, and I needed a job so I can transition into Los Angeles. And then I got my own place with my very first roommate ever in Los Angeles in Sherman Oaks, and I started working at a restaurant in Sherman Oaks Galleria and started building my community from there.
I just have a question, though. What is the Mercado Academy?
Sure. So Mercado Academy is an education brand that I am creating. Mm-hmm. I'm not really sure how much I'm going to put into it, but you know, for years I've been creating educational content for music creators, whether it's teaching courses at college campuses or doing webinars or doing workshops. And, you know, I've been asked many times via social media, my blog, if I was going to ever do like online courses or something. So I thought to myself, okay, well, you know, if I can put together a couple online courses and maybe package some of my workshops under that brand, maybe, you know, I can, you know, kind of create something. So that's kind of what Mercado Academy is. Currently, I'm on a multi-city tour. Just got back from Cleveland. Before that,
I saw you in the Dallas airport.
Yeah, before that, I was in San Francisco and Oakland. Before that, I was in Brooklyn teaching these music industry masterclasses pretty much across the country. And it's been really great. I didn't know what to expect. I've never taught in those cities before and didn't know what the turnout was going to be. All of them were really good. Oakland, it was standing room only. So I want to shout out Zoo Labs for hosting that, and for the Bop Stop at the Music Settlement in Cleveland for hosting my masterclass there. But yeah, I mean, it's a masterclass for music entrepreneurs, whether you want to start a label or whether you are, you know, an indie band and you're kind of self-managed. It's just a multi-purpose masterclass that I'm currently conducting as a way to test some material as well as promote the Mercado Academy brand.
Well, when did you start, I guess, because you came here as a high school grad, so when did you start your own higher education path?
Right, so I always wanted to go to UCLA as a kid. Like, since I was in middle school, that was my goal.
Yeah, fuck SC.
To go to UCLA. And I remember, like, when I got when it was time to apply for college, I literally only applied to UCLA. I applied to Florida State University as well as kind of a backup just because I wanted to go somewhere warm and nice weather. But I didn't know much about
it. Not like Ohio?
Ohio gets really hot in the summer, and that's not what I want.
It's like the Midwest. It's the worst of both worlds.
Yeah, the humidity is unbearable. And then, you know, the winters are just ridiculous.
Hashtag brutal.
Brutal, yeah. But I wanted to go to California. That was my dream school, UCLA. I did not get accepted. I was devastated. I was like, why me? You know, yeah, you and the other million students that applied.
It's the number one applicant school in the world. More people apply to UCLA than any school on the planet.
Well, I did not get in, and a friend of mine told me about Cal State LA, Cal State University, mm-hmm. Los Angeles. And I'm from Ohio, so I don't know much about the universities here. I just thought, oh, they sound similar, so I'll go there. So I applied.
CSLA, UCLA.
Yeah, exactly. So I applied to Cal State LA, got in. My mom and I came out to LA for orientation, and I did not like it. I didn't like the major I chose. I didn't like the campus. Not that the campus was bad. It was just that it was under construction at the time.
What major did you choose?
Organizational communication.
That's what my wife has, organizational studies. Okay. It's kind of an all-inclusive one, right?
I wanted communications, but all they have is organizational communications. I want to be more focused on entertainment industry, and this was more focused on kind of business operations,
mm-hmm.
Or organization operations, which is fine, but it wasn't what I wanted. So instead of doing the whole orientation experience, my mom and I just, you know, went to different campuses, and we checked out UCLA, we checked out USC, and then someone at a convenience store told me about the junior colleges here, and that they have a transfer program called TAP, Transfer Alliance Program.
Yep,
If you do well, then you're pretty much have a priority admission to the university of your choice.
The UC system, right?
Well, so I was like, okay, this sounds great. Let me try it. So I checked out SMC, and then I checked out some other junior colleges. Ultimately, I decided on LAVC. I was in the Valley when I moved here in December. So I went to Los Angeles Valley College. I did the TAP program.
Where's that?
Los Angeles Valley College is in Valley Glen.
Okay, because I know of Pierce, and I know, isn't there?
It's on this street.
Oh, really?
you just go west.
I just missed it.
And you're okay. Right into it. So it's in Van Nuys or Valley Glen, depending on who you talk to.
Valley Nuys.
Yeah, exactly. And I did that. Fun fact, Paul Abdul went there.
Oh, straight up.
Yeah, exactly. And
my favorite idol judge.
she was definitely the most passionate one. Simon was not the most passionate one.
But Simon was always right, anyway.
They used to come to the restaurant that I used to be a manager at in Sherman Oak Gallery, so it was cool to see Randy and all those guys.
Yo, dog!
Yeah, exactly. We need a table for four.
Yo, dog. Just not feeling it.
Yeah. So I went to LAVC. I went to school nights and weekends for 2 years and worked at a restaurant that ended up
working at the Galleria.
At the Galleria. But I worked there for 9 months in a restaurant closed. Then I worked at Robex, the corporate office, mm-hmm. as a marketing coordinator in Manhattan Beach. So I lived in Burbank. I worked in Manhattan Beach. And I went to school in Van Nuys.
That's a big commute for
it
someone
was
without a car.
3 hour commute. I had a car. At the time.
Okay, good.
But it was a 3 hour daily commute just to go to work and go to school
without traffic.
That was with traffic.
Okay, good. Yeah, that quality of life is no bueno.
So I did that for my entire 2 years at LAVC. Worked full time with LAVC on nights and weekends. Did the honors program and the TAP program. So by the time I finished, I was accepted to every college I applied to, which was UCLA, UC Berkeley, USC.
Living your dream.
It was like, yay, this is what I wanted when I was in high school. Just 2 years later now.
Why'd you choose LA over Berkeley? Is it because you were just attached to LA?
LA, Berkeley had the major I wanted, which was mass communications. UCLA is in LA, mm-hmm. and I wanted to be in LA. It's also the college I wanted to go to forever.
It was ingrained.
I wasn't accepted to the major that I wanted. I was accepted to the second major that I wanted.
Because you applied later toward.
Yeah, so right. I was accepted as a sociology major, but then I double majored in communication studies. So yeah, I ended up going to UCLA. I transferred over. Go Bruin transfers.
And respect.
Yeah, and what's crazy is my entire life as a kind of high school and middle school kid, I always wanted to go to UCLA. I wanted to be a part of that campus, and then I get there and I did nothing on campus. Absolutely nothing.
Did you live close, or did you still live in the Valley?
I did not live on campus.
The commuting?
I lived close to campus. I lived in a private apartment across the street from campus, but I was not engaged on campus like I was engaged in high school because I was a college promoter, a club promoter.
You were also going there later in the game. Usually,
I was later in the game. Yeah, it's like I didn't have friends from freshman year, but I did make. I met. Don't get me wrong. I made a ton of friends, especially transfer friends, because we had a transfer program. The summer before.
You're in the same boat.
Yeah, so I made a lot of really good lifelong friends that were also transfers, and then I made friends there that I met on campus, some of my best friends. But I was not as engaged as I thought I would be as a high school kid, and because I was very engaged. I was in 26 student groups when I was in high school. So I was in maybe two at UCLA. But that's when I really started my whole career in the entertainment industry, because I started promoting clubs.
Which clubs? Any? Because I know that there's like a no dance ordinance in Westwood.
No, I wasn't. I was in Hollywood, so I wasn't doing clubs. And there's no clubs in Westwood. I was doing, you know, the celebrity, you know, socialite clubs in Hollywood, and as a club promoter, I was a sub promoter, and then kind of grew from there as a main promoter. Had my own nights, and I did some, you know, club events with some really, you know, interesting people.
That's a word I use to describe an ugly painting, by the way. Interesting.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Like the layout of this room currently is very interesting.
The layout is very interesting.
Yep.
The entire building is kind of interesting, but in terms of the pictures.
So. Yes. Well, it's sponsored by Dan Brink's hockey career. Anyway, continue.
So, yeah, so I spent my time as a club promoter, which evolved into a special events planner. So I was doing, you know, big budget special events for fashion and entertainment brands, not only in clubs, but in mansions and warehouses and things like that. And just, you know, really got great at bringing people together in these nightlife environments. Eventually, I decided my senior year at UCLA to start managing DJs, because I was booking them all the time, and the DJs I booked, you know, liked working with me and liked working my gigs, and I paid them fairly and I paid them on time and I was transparent. So they said, well, you know, why don't you just manage me? And I never thought of managing, you know, DJs. And then I got them all together at the California Pizza Kitchen in Westwood and brought them in and said, hey, I think I'm going to start a management company and it's going to be all DJs. And I signed my first round of talent, and that company was called Renaissance Artist Management.
Ah, and you were on the dark side.
Yeah, Ram Artist, and from there just evolved to here we are, you know, almost 10 years later. So Ram Artist evolved into a multi-city management firm. I had managers in different cities. We're managing punk rock bands.
Which ones? That excites little man Scott, who just took a picture of you.
Yeah, so I mean, so the way I grew my management company, which by the way ended up, you know, we were collaborating with Live Nation. I had DJs doing Coachella. We've done like major, you know, tours. We had artists, you know, performing overseas. The way I grew my management company is I started my management company in LA, and then I found and met other managers with their own small management companies. Did deals with them to kind of join my brand,
right?
To expand my brand.
Well, when you're doing a club promotion, your brand can really get built up,
right? So I had access to certain resources. I mean, as a club promoter, I, you know, it was great networking. I mean, I met tons of managers. I had clients who were, you know, agents at, you know, William Morris and CAA. I had clients who were A&Rs at labels. I had, you know, so I ended up meeting.
You meet the night owl crowd.
Exactly. I mean, I met attorneys and managers and booking agents and so forth. So I had the network, and a lot of these managers had the passion, but not necessarily the network. I was also a, you know, marketer, so I had the marketing chops to help them with, you know, putting together EPKs and how to do branding, how to build websites, and
this is well concurrently as you're a student, correct? Or was this post?
No, this began my last few months at UCLA.
Okay. By the way, we're gonna take a short break, and we're gonna transition to post academia full time.
Sure.
With Dave Bogan, who post academia is helping academics. Look at that. I hope you're enjoying yourself. Stick around. We're gonna take a short break. Hello, welcome back to Dave Bogan talking about his growth in OIO to being the club promoter and the tail end of his childhood dream of UCLA. So let's get back into it. So you said just now you can wrap this up in 60, so I'm going to look at the stopwatch and see if you can do that.
Yeah, I mean, so I spent my, you know, early years working with DJs, and right after college I got hired as the director of marketing of a retail chain called Chic Shoes. And there I decided to oversee the development and recommended the launch of a music program called Chic Music. And so concurrently, I was the director of marketing of Chic Shoes and the GM of Chic Music and running this.
Are you wearing Chic Shoes right now?
I'm not. The Chic Shoes doesn't have men's shoes. They're a retail store.
Well, no wonder.
They carry.
Not that there's anything wrong with that.
They have women's shoes, but they carry all the major brands for men. So I oversaw the music program, and outside of that, I was operating my own my own music company. So Renaissance Artist Management was an artist management firm. I had an indie label called Loft 24 Records and an indie publishing company called
Loft. You've always been a hyphen, bro.
Yeah, so it was great. You know, at Chic, I was able to build more connections for my outside companies, but also support a lot of independent artists through programming at Chic. So that's how I transitioned from kind of academia and the event world into...
I'd say that was about a minute. Good job.
Yeah.
So I guess transferring out of academia, but you were also a performer. Were you doing that at all in L.A., or is that all you got that bug out of your system?
Yeah, that bug left really quick. The last time I went on an audition actually was for Making the Band, which that season turned
out. The Diddy Show?
Day 26 was the name of the group. And I was like, my name is Day. I should have been that group.
You should have been the group.
But that was the last audition I've ever done as an aspiring artist, and that was a long time ago. And I have not pursued acting or singing ever since I really started focusing on the business side of the industry as a producer and entrepreneur.
So how did you get, I guess, into working with the royalty?
Yeah, so first of all, a lot of things just happened very organically as far as how I've transitioned over my career. I spent almost 4 years as the head of marketing and strategic partnerships at Chic Shoes and the general manager of Chic Music, producing all of these interesting music partnerships around pretty much all over the West Coast. And one of the things I did was I oversaw our in-store music program, so licensing with labels and publishers and distributors for music on our digital store downloads, as well as music videos playing in our stores. And I got laid off abruptly in 2012, which kind of gave me an opportunity to start my first music tech startup.
So a blessing in disguise.
Yeah. So I was working on a startup already called Songbank with a colleague of mine. And it was a marketplace for songwriters to shop unpublished songs to A&Rs, because I was doing that already with my...
For other people to use and, yes. And for their artists?
Yeah, exactly. I had built a network of A&Rs for the songwriters I represented. And it was very challenging to kind of submit songs. There was no real process, right? It's emails and so forth. So I built this marketplace. I talked to a lot of A&Rs. At the time, they were pretty high-level A&Rs, like senior VPs of A&Rs at different labels, and said, hey, if I made this platform, would you guys use it to find songs from not very well-known songwriters but who are very talented? And I was like, absolutely. So I started working on this concept called Songbank. We got accepted into an accelerator.
What's an accelerator? Just assume that people listening are learning how to read.
Sure. A business accelerator is basically a organization that gives startup founders resources to help them work on or grow their startups. And that resources could be financial resources like seed investment. It could be mentorship. It could be workshops and introductions to music industry people, whichever vertical you're in, whatever industry you're in. So we were accepted to one in Orange County called K5 Launch. But during that time, I was working on a separate idea outside of Songbank, which was an in-store music video network. And I pitched the idea back to my former employer, who ultimately became my first customer. So I ended up launching my first company in the music tech space, which was called Chasmal Music. It was an in-store music video network and 100.
What stores, like major chain stores?
They're all in Chic Shoes. So Chic.
Strictly Chic.
Yeah,
okay.
So Chic is, think of Chic as a hip hop urban outfitters. No. A hip hop.
A truly urban outfitters.
Yeah, exactly. Way more urban outfitters. A hip hop Hot Topic.
Okay.
Because it's very much music influence. So you go to Hot Topic, you see all the band music videos playing. So you go to Chic, you saw hip hop videos playing.
Would they sell merch from like Kanye West or people who were big at that time?
So yeah, sneakers, right? So all the
They wouldn't sell shirts of them, like, because Hot Topic.
Yeah, we're not. We sell merch as well, but but it's a sneaker company.
Okay.
So primarily with sneakers, they've since expanded in their apparel program, but it was primarily sneakers. There was definitely apparel as well, and we did do merch, but primarily with sneaker deals. I did a lot of sneaker deals with artists when I was there. So I started handling all the licensing, obviously, because I owned a company that licensed music. And that's when I started to learn more about, the licensing process from a general licensing standpoint, from public performance licenses. Fast forward.
And you realized how the artist got fucked.
Well, I mean, I already kind of knew that because I also still owned a label and a publishing company and a.
I'm losing track of your resume, company. Bro. You should have handed me one.
Yeah. So here I have a label, I have a publishing company, I have a management firm, and then now I have an in-store music video network. All of these things touch music copyrights, right? I was executive producer of projects, so I was also a publisher, so I controlled and owned copyrights. And then as a licensee, I licensed copyrights as an in-store music service. And then, of course, I've just spent several years as a general manager of music of a retail chain, so I handled all of our music programming stuff. So a lot of music programming, a lot of music business stuff. At the time, I had not had any traditional music business education. It's all had all been self-taught. So in 2013, I decided to go get a master's in music business. And
what year was it when you graduated from UCLA?
I graduated UCLA in 2008.
Okay.
I supposed to graduate in 2007, but I double majored in transfer. So I found out that California State University Northridge has a program called Music Industry Administration, which had just launched the year before I started to look. So if had I looked any sooner, I wouldn't have known about it because it hadn't launched. So I was literally the second cohort of this program ever.
Was it a very small class?
It was a small cohort. There was like 20-something of us.
Oh, cool.
And we're still, a lot of us are still in touch today. And they're all doing their own things. There's a good friend of mine, he's now a music supervisor at NBC Universal. Another friend is at Dolby in the Bay Area working on Dolby products. And another one's at Pandora. So all of us went through this master program together, and we went out to the music industry and are doing our thing. So I went through this master program at SC Sun, which I now have the opportunity to teach at.
We'll get to that.
Yeah. And I took a class called Music Publishing and Copyright Administration by Steve Winogradsky, who actually wrote the book Music Publishing, The Complete Guide, which is an amazing book.
So he's a semi-authority.
Semi-authority, yeah. He was a very well-respected, music lawyer. Mm-hmm. In the space, spoke at tons of panels, was consulted on in terms of major music industry contracts. So he taught this class, and I had knew a lot about music publishing already, just as a publisher and through my self education. But he kind of helped me go to the next level in terms of my knowledge and understanding of how this stuff works. And
because it's very complex,
it's still very complex. And but that class, got me interested more into the publishing world. At the time, I was more on the music creator side and marketing, kind of marketing promotion of music. And his class got me more interested in the monetization and licensing and protection of copyrights.
Which is the bread and butter of Tune Registry, correct?
The bread and butter of Tune Registry, yes.
Look at that, so, transition.
Exactly. So my research in the grad school was primarily around the music licensing ecosystem, how music is licensed and how royalties flow. Graduated in 2015 from CSUN with a master's in music industry administration, and then that same year started Tune Registry. During that time, I'd also started teaching. I was teaching a class at Emerson College.
Boston?
Yeah, well, the LA campus.
Yeah, some of those schools have satellite campuses. I mean, because Emerson, there's a huge contingency of graduates out here.
Yes, because we kind of piped them in. So we have Emerson has a really strong satellite campus program. I think we had 225 students, and they do internships in the entertainment industry.
It's pretty much an entertainment-based school,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah.
Okay.
The LA campus, yes. So, I was teaching a class at Emerson. I was also just starting to work with South by Southwest as a mentor. And then I came up with the idea of Tune Registry at South by Southwest 2015. A lot of the panels were talking about the complexities of metadata and licensing and the flow of royalties. And I thought there has to be an easy way to help music creators organize their music metadata, get it to all these different music rights organizations, and help them properly license their music. So I started asking, does this exist? And everyone asked, no, it doesn't exist.
Right.
And those who said, yes, it does exist, they said, yeah, this is a software, and it's $1,000 a month. I was like, yeah, no indie band's going to pay for that.
No, major label bands might not even.
Not even. And I found out that most major independent labels are not going to pay for that either.
It's a lot of money.
So it's a lot
of money. That's $12,000 a year.
And some are even more expensive. And then I talked to some buddies that I'm not going to name their labels, but
don't. This is not a Muckraker show. We're not going to expose some bad.
No. It's nothing bad. I was in terms of research, understanding what they do to kind of manage their metadata. But a lot of labels are still using Excel spreadsheets, right? And some are using Microsoft Access databases. At the end of the day, the problems that we talk about in the music industry as far as the flow of royalties and music creators not getting paid or unclaimed royalties, all that stuff is what I studied. And then I did spent 2 years in research and development, R&D, understanding how do you help a music creator get paid. And it starts with proper collection and distribution of metadata and rights information.
Mm-hmm. Collection.
Yeah. So that's what TuneRegistry does, right? So I started TuneRegistry. I put together an amazing team of co-founders, Jesse Morris, Kara McKee, and Shane Zielinskas. And we are, all entrepreneurs. We're interested in the music industry. Three of us are musical. Kara's a musician. Jesse's a drummer.
Drummers are musicians too.
Yeah, they're musicians too.
Question. Okay, so let's just say right now I start a project called Waldman's Words, the rock band, and I want to work with TuneRegistry. Walk me through that process.
Sure, you go to TuneRegistry.com.
Okay, I go on the interweb.
Yeah, and then you pick a plan. We have a free plan, and you sign up, and now, bam, you have an online catalog management system where you can now. For every song that you create, you can create a song profile. You can start inputting.
Do you upload the actual song?
Eventually, you upload the recording. Yeah. So, think about it this way. If you're a band independent artist, singer, songwriter, where does all the information about your music, where does it live? It's in Dropbox. It's in USB drives. It's in emails. It's in whatever.
On a notebook.
Yeah, a notebook. So TuneRegistry kind of helps you gather up all that information and put it into one place so that it's organized. Because we are directly connected with the greater music industry in terms of delivering data, we know what information they need, so we help guide you to input all that information. And then it's also helpful for yourself because you can go back and look at a song and see, this was the splits for that, and here's this.
Splits mean writing splits, like I wrote a song with Dave Bogan.
Right. So we know what percentage each of us own, and who's your publisher, and
if any.
And then there's a lot of stuff. Music industry, there's a lot of stakeholders, there's a lot of organizations, and there's a lot of various codes in the music industry that you have to use, and so we help you organize all that.
And do you also notate, this was produced by X, engineered by Y, recorded at Studio B?
All of that. Yep. All of that plus more. So you can input almost 200 lines of data per track.
Okay. That's a lot.
Yeah. So because there's a lot of places that need that stuff, right? So, generally a band will, record music. They'll know the title. They know who worked on it. That's kind of it. And then they'll put it out. And then they wonder, why isn't it on Shazam? Or why isn't it showing up in this service? Or why doesn't AllMusic.com have our credits? Well, because you never gave it to any of those places, right? In the way that the industry needs it. So what TuneRegistry does, first and foremost, is we help music creators organize their music catalog. The second thing we do is we deliver that information to our network of partners. And our network of partners are music rights organizations like ASCAP, BMI, CSAC, HFA, Music Reports, and Sound Exchange.
I'm ASCAP.
Okay. So we deliver all your title registrations to those places so you get your music properly registered so that when your music goes live, it's being properly licensed and then you are being accounted to so you can be paid. The other thing we do is we deliver data to metadata services, which people simply don't know exist because they're not consumer-facing necessarily. They're B2B, right? So when you go to Spotify and you are typing to search for an artist, or you go to an artist page, there's information on the artist page, like biographies and mm-hmm. photos and all that stuff. And there's other services, every major service. That data is powered by data services. So there's Gracenote, there's used to be called Rovi, now it's TiVo. There's a company called Audible Magic, which handles audio detection to make sure that content that is uploaded to certain platforms like Vimeo is properly licensed, or if it's not, it can be monetized. So all of that stuff is happening in the background.
And that often gets overlooked by artists.
Well, artists are unaware of it. So you know, in order for Gracenote to deliver your track titles to an audio device player that they power, so that when you put a CD in, or if you download MP3, it shows the name of the track, mm-hmm. as opposed to track one.
Right.
Like, they need to have that information, right? So we deliver data to a lot of data services, and we also deliver data to radio airplay monitoring services that power charts, like Radio Wave and Media Base, which is owned by iHeartRadio. So Tune Registry is in the business of helping independent artists, primarily, also independent labels and publishers, to organize their metadata and rights information, and then to get it delivered everywhere so that their music is properly set up in the music industry. And if that's all happening, then you reduce the instances of artists not being properly accounted to, and therefore properly not being paid. Now, if they are unpaid, then that's where royalty fame comes in. So you can sign up for Tune Registry for free, mm-hmm. and you can manage 100 songs for free. You can upgrade to a paid account, which would give you access to the registrations. We also are official U.S. ISRC manager, which means we assign ISRC codes for your recordings.
Which you need to upload.
Which you must have in order to upload it to Spotify and Apple, mm-hmm. and everyone else. And it's important that you get ISRCs from an official ISRC manager, which we are obligated to follow the ethics and standards of the ISRC, governing body, which is the RIAA in the U.S. Otherwise, you might get ISRC codes that are erroneous, and that does no one good, and it happens a lot, and it leads to a lot of errors, and ultimately, can affect royalties.
Well, speaking of the opposite of an error, we're going to put this to a halt, and I just want you, I guess, to briefly tell the people listening, the tens of millions, how they can get a hold of your ebook.
Sure. So,
and your socials, everything.
Yeah, so I just launched an ebook with Creative Future, which is a creative rights advocacy organization. It's called The DIY Musician's Starter Guide to Being Your Own Label and Publisher.
Punk rock.
It's available. You go to daebogan.com. That's daebogan music.com. Click on the tab that says writer. And then there's a list of stuff that I've written. Not only the ebook, but also CD Baby Music blog. I've written some stuff there and some other websites. So you can download it for free. It's only 20 pages. You can knock it out and learn what it means to be.
You can read a page a day and have it done in less than a month.
Yeah, I mean, you'd fly.
I'm talking about the social and the attention span of most people.
Yeah, well, if you're an indie band, then you need to read the book, period.
Like so, Passman's book.
Passman's book is amazing. That book goes into more depth. It's a long book.
It's longer than 20.
It's longer than 20. I think it's almost 400 pages.
It's worth it.
And it's worth it, absolutely. It's the first book you read in grad school in music business. And I own several of them, and I make my students read them as well.
Because they're always getting updated.
Yeah.
And you can't say update without day.
Yeah, that's right. See?
So I guess your other socials, and then just let's wrap this up. But I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy, and I like you as a person.
Sure. Thank you. Well, just go to tuneregistry.com. From there, you can go to all the Tune Registry socials, and then go to royaltyclaim.com, which we didn't talk much about. But
We only have an hour.
Yeah, we only have an hour. But you can go to Royalty Claim and learn more about Royalty Claim and how we help you find unclaimed royalties. And my socials everywhere is just at Dave Bogan Music.
Did you have an okay time today?
Had a great time.
That's better than okay. I'd say it's like an 8 or 9 out of 10.
Yeah.
So stick around, Waldman's Words, every single Tuesday night, 5 o'clock Pacific time, where we are submerged in a heat wave of sweat, and 8 o'clock on the East Coast, where it's going to get snowy and you're going to hate your lives. So much love today. Fist bump.
Cool.
Boom. We done.
Nice.